Hey, Dieter and Jake here on a Sunday
in the void
after another football game that was professionally performed by the old San Francisco 49ers, bastions of excellence as they might be. Another loss, as you put it in the text chain, a clutch loss for the 49ers.
Clutch. Very clutch. They drop, and depending on what the Cowboys, you know, do in this game here, they could drop, I think, 11th. And then you know, if the New Orleans Saints win a game, they could get in the top 10, folks. The funniest twist of this season is the Dallas Cowboys somehow becoming a better team with Cooper Rush as their quarterback.
This was, as I said in my post-game column, Jake, this was just the perfect encapsulation of the San Francisco 49ers season. Just thumb up the butthole the whole way home. Even when something good was happening, they had to find ways to make bad things happen. Weirdness ensued. Where's that Debo Samuel been the entire time?
Debo just showing up and in prime form when it matters literally the least. When it could, sorry, let me rephrase. Not when it matters the least, when it doesn't matter at all.
Right. Can't divide by zero.
If you want to talk about emotional importance, okay. But it objectively, they found out even the 1%, less than 1% chance they had evaporated officially before the game.
Done.
And they went, all right, let's go stink it up.
It's my time to cook. He was awesome. He was incredible.
And it was everything we talked about where it's like, to be fair, the Dolphins just played a ton of zone and gave him great looks. And
did either team prepare for this game?
No.
Because like legitimately, it didn't look like it. It looked like they're just like, it was like an NBA game. Most NBA games are just two teams doing their stuff in a vacuum. And maybe they'll have to think about it for the final 2 minutes, but probably not. They just go out there and do their stuff. And then at the end of the game, they figure out who won the game. But they're not actually playing each other. They're just doing their thing. That's what it looked like.
They're just Jordan. They're just doing Jordan Poole things out there.
Yeah.
They're just dribbling a lot.
There's a lot of chucking. Jordan Poole energy on that, on that field, court, whatever today. That was an abysmal football game. That was the kind of football game that makes you question why we bother doing any of this. And I listen, obviously when it has no playoff implications whatsoever, that was going to be inherent.
Like, right.
We knew that this was going to be a slog in some way, but for the Niners to throw out 11 penalties for 90 yards and not be able to run the ball. I mean, just,
wow. It's one thing to know it doesn't matter. It's one thing to know, okay, this game's out of reach. I mean, the season's out of reach. We're going into this. We know it's just going to be a meaningless game, but hey, we're going down to Miami. Why don't we just, for the sake of it, just play a good game here, right?
College try, eh?
Right. For our own, you know, pride and whatever it is, we have to play a very physical game, so we might as well try, right? And
sure.
To an extent, maybe they tried.
I don't think effort was the issue. I think it was the inability to execute anything.
They just did the same thing they do all year where they go, all right, looks like you might be starting to drive. Okay, penalty. And then they go, okay, another penalty. Okay, somebody missed an assignment in the most glaring way I've ever seen in my life.
That's right.
The amount of times that Tony Romo on this broadcast highlighted them with just an offensive line. Oh, Jim, there's only four guys coming. They've got six in to block. That can't happen, Jim. And it did, Jim. Jim, it did happen. And it happened multiple times, as it always does with this team this season.
I was listening. I like to listen to the Niners radio broadcast during games just for the sake of every now and again, Greg Papa gets a tidbit from inside the house that then I'm the only one in the media listening. Right.
Right.
That's nice to pass along, and sometimes it's enlightening. They were just dying on the radio broadcast today. Tim Ryan, who is just rah, 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 brother, he was out there just like, I don't know what it is to live anymore. He was downright philosophical when he was discussing.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome what this team will do? I mean, I was just downright cranky. I was mad that we had to watch this game because that's what it is, right? It's supposed to be an entertainment product, and it was just like a sludge. It's like when you're cleaning your sink in the bottom, all that stuff is coming out.
The underneath the garbage disposal.
Yeah, it's that substance. That is what this was in a manifestation. And maybe
in the drain,
you know,
in the shower.
And maybe in an ideal world, all that sludge leaks out and they get a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle type situation where, you know, they're hiding somebody and he soaks up all that sludge and turns into something incredible. That's where we're at. That's where I'm taking this.
I'll tell you where we're at. Like, I don't think we should do any preparation on Detroit or Arizona. I think that we are.
No.
I think that we are straight up in draft mode. I can't do it. Let's just go through some stuff because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this game. I don't think anyone wants to like breaking it down. What the hell's the point of that? Let's talk to our friend Wood Gravy here. According to Kyle, they weren't using screens due to looks earlier in the season. Is this true? Because a couple of the screens in the last few games could have flipped 2 to 3 games. It's pretty hard to run a screen in man-to-man. You want to run a screen in zone because you can overload a side of the field and get good blocking. I'm not smart enough to figure out what the full rules of when you run a screen are. But it is pretty unquestioned that the George Kittle screen, when run, has been effective this season. And I am starting to have some doubts that it is entirely tied to the looks that they were getting. Though, one of the two games where he's had, was it the Rams or was it Chicago?
It was Chicago. It was Chicago, I think.
So Chicago and Miami, they're getting a lot of zone looks. They can run the screens. So there might be something there.
And you can run it against bullshit. You can run it against man, but it is tougher, especially when it's out on the boundary and, you know, sometimes. But that's like not the real problem with this offense. It's a fair question, and I like the question a lot
because I hadn't thought it that through. Clearly, I do think that they tried to run a couple of Kittle screens earlier in the season. And also, you have to take into account Kittle is so vital for this team running the football that I don't think Kyle was willing to sacrifice him. And it's really a sacrifice to run a screen for him. Maybe that's his caution to the wind. Let's go to ABC 123. I know he gave up a couple of catches. Renardo Green's a player. No doubt about that. Absolutely. Spider Rico, sloppiest 49ers team since Chip Kelly.
Shout out Chip Kelly.
Shout out Chip Kelly. We're going to test your pee and see where you're at. And we're not looking for drugs.
They give Chip Kelly a lot of time when Ohio State plays, and not quite enough time talking about how he went at the strength of the Michigan defense by just running the ball at their incredible defensive line. Anyway, moving on from Chip Kelly.
Old Fetus Face, thanks for the plus 160 Pearsall to get 25 yard suggestion. Dieter did that on Larry's stream, did that on my man Josh's stream. I didn't have a lot of bets this week. Fucking nailed him again. I'm on fire on the betting aspect of things. I'm the opposite of the 49ers when it comes to betting right now.
Yeah. Ricky, I would say, looked good when throwing the ball and then had to go on your tangent. It seems like you want to go there.
Thank you. We have a chemistry now that you understand where I'm going and where
I can see it happening.
Well, Ricky Pearsall couldn't see that Juwan Jennings was offline in those two spots. And let me just, when I was asking Kyle, not directly, passively, because I know he's a viewer of the show, maybe play Pearsall as the X. Part of it was to help Juwan Jennings, because in the game against the Rams, I saw Kyle and his staff doing so much work to get Juwan Jennings a couple of yards of cushion at the line of scrimmage, despite playing X receiver, where you should not be. You should be right on the line. That's locked in, right? You're the far guy, weak side, like you should be on the line of scrimmage. And they are moving him all around while maintaining X receiver status, not exclusively, but he is typically the X receiver, trying to move him around, tight splits, wide, whatever, to get him that free release that he used to get as a flanker. I'm going to provide a little bit of deference. I know that we are Pearsall homers here, okay? He should know the fucking play. I can't say that he was, like, in the right.
Right. No, he was wrong.
But it's preposterous that they are doing all of this effort to get Juwan Jennings a free release against press man to man. Just put him back at flanker. Stop playing him at X receiver. Play Pearsall at X receiver. You wouldn't have this problem. Instead, you're treating your X receiver like a flanker, and now you want your flanker to be an X receiver.
It's all backwards.
I got an easy solution. Do the thing that they're supposed to do. Ricky Pearsall's in the heat of the moment. Again, he messed up, right? His responsibility, I don't know if it was clear or not, but it was his responsibility. And you could tell because Leonard Hankerson was just reaming him out on the sideline. I think Kittle took some responsibility for the second one, but it doesn't matter. It was on Pearsall to line up at the line of scrimmage. But when you're a rookie in the league and you got a lot going on, you didn't get a lot of practice time and you got no practice time in training.
He got no practice time.
Right.
He got no practice time. It was a little in OTAs and none in training camp.
And no practice with Purdy effectively during the regular season because he comes back, Purdy gets in, it's a whole mess. All of that to say, when you line up in the flanker spot, you have never once in your entire life before today lined up on the line of scrimmage if you're the flanker. And yet that was Ricky Pearsall's responsibility on those two plays. Again, it's on him because that was the responsibility. But what a weird responsibility. I'm right. Going to give the kid a little bit of slack for not thinking I should be on the line of scrimmage when he's playing flanker.
Yeah, so, also, outside of that, looked good.
Looked good. I wish they would have continued to throw him the football. That seemed like that would have been a good idea.
I'm just saying, in a season that doesn't matter, throw him the ball 10 times and see what happens. Look at Brian Thomas Jr. on a meaningless Jags team just dominating.
Brian Thomas Jr. is unquestionably a better player.
I'm not saying that. No question about it. He's been insane. Yeah. But I'm just saying, when you're a rookie, reps are so, so, so crucial. That should be the priority. At least I saw Cowan out there a couple times. He didn't get targeted, but
yeah, I
don't know what to make of him.
Okay, let's go into another thing that pissed me off about this game. Kyle, I thought Kyle actually called a really nice game. I thought there was a lot of really good stuff that Kyle put on tape in this game as a play caller. Obviously, having Debo back at the full Debo helps immensely in looking good as a play caller. They didn't get the run game going. That's the offensive line and Patrick Taylor not being good at anything. Okay. It's
not good.
He can't run the ball. He can't catch the ball. Every time he tries to catch the ball, he bats it like a setter in volleyball.
I just muted Dieter. My bad.
Why'd you do that? You don't like volleyball?
Trying to mute myself. My dog is mutilating a dog toy. Continue.
I didn't know you had that power to mute me. I think you would have been using it long before today. Regardless, twice he caught the ball and full Ronnie Belled it. Not just like, oh, I dropped it like Tyreek Hill did four times today. Thanks, Tyreek. Really could have used you today for fantasy football. But instead, bats it like a toddler with a mobile above his head or something. It was bizarre. It was bizarre. And he certainly can't pass protect. So I'm not sure what it is.
Well, that explains why he was their, you know, fourth, fifth string running back.
I mean, it feels like you
could
do a lot
better for
fifth. He was
a special teams guy. And they went, all right, we have throw a Bonaconda out there, I guess, and just see what happens. It was bad. It was pretty putrid.
Keyshawn Vaughn in my life. They were running Debo, and I'm like, that's a good
McNichols.
Idea.
Jeremy McNichols is like doing wonders for the Washington Commanders. He was on the 49ers team last year. Yeah. Like, you can find random guys who know how to play the position, who've just been around for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
No, I'm just, okay, so they can't run the ball. But I did like a lot of the play calling. Where was the aggression? Where was the caution to the wind? I cannot understand why you would kick a 21-yard field goal in this game. Like, how is that acceptable? How is that at all reasonable given the circumstances? Oh, we might lose our confidence. Who gives a shit?
Is that was I? I cannot no one gave really it, no wrap one, my
no
head
one asked
it.
About it, but no one, you know, I didn't hear any official excuse.
Yeah, where was the fake punt? Thank you. They had a great opportunity to do it. You don't think it was a great opportunity?
No, I think they were on like the 36-yard line.
But Dieter, the mode of this, the ethos of this,
we gotta crawl before we can walk here. I'm asking Kyle Shanahan.
Enter the void. We're in the void. All right,
we're in the void. That's for sure. But Kyle needs to. It needs to be so goddamn obvious, right? Because those are the. I'm not asking Kyle to do something actually big and bold. I'm just asking him to take a risk on a 51-49 scenario, right? I'm not asking him to go for it on his own 16.
Right.
Like, hey, if the situation comes up and Kyle Shanahan, of all people, thinks to himself, hey, maybe we can fake it here, follow that feeling.
And that was one thing we talked about, right? We not even just fake punt, like... Just experiment. Just be bold and say, all right, the reality is the season is lost. Why don't we try something weird? And again, Kyle, he dialed up some tight end screens. He had some good looks. But it was not like in those key situations, in those fourth downs, when this game doesn't matter. Hey, how about you go for it for the sake of, I don't know, entertainment, joy, something new. If you don't get it, oh, what, you're going to go down in the half and you're going to be down 6 instead of 3? Oh. Yeah. According to math, that is still a one possession game. Like,
well, and to be fair here, so you're suggesting that on the 4th and 3 from the San Francisco 37 with 6:45 to play in the fourth quarter, right? It was the use check for 20 yards and then 3 and out after that. You're suggesting they should have gone for it. It wouldn't have mattered because Ike Yadam had an illegal substitution penalty on the play. So if they had faked it and gotten it, it still wouldn't have counted.
That's awesome.
Which is the most 2024 Niners answer ever.
I genuinely do think that's beautiful. I think that's there's something poetic about the level of dog shit that they have put together. And it's just
I sent you
a masterclass.
I sent you an Instagram post yesterday about like how college kids no longer have answers to college essays with the question, right. Like, what piece of art moved you? This was a piece of art that moved me. This game. It didn't move me in a positive way. My life is in no way, but my life is appreciably worse for having spent time with this game. I have a lesser relationship with my family now because of this game. But that could have been really quality time. You know, I have family coming into town this upcoming week, which is probably why we're not going to fucking stream. And let me tell you, I could have been much better prepared for that instance, and yet here we go. By the way, the Dolphins, like, not a good team either. The Dolphins are a hot mess of a football team, and Dieter, they needed all the help they can get in the Niners. Just like, what buddies they are. Just like, here you go.
This goes back to my point years ago that there are, like, no real... There's, like, two good teams in the NFL. Like, everyone's...
Is Kansas City even good?
No.
Kansas City's
not.
Like the antithesis. They're the opposite. They're the bizarro Niners. So, like, as I wrote my column today, like, the spreadsheet would tell you that the Niners had a good game. I'm sure the X and Y coordinates are going to be like
moving the ball, but like all the penalties, yeah, you know,
but those don't count, right? Except if you watch this game, you go, this team is dog shit.
They're terrible. They're really just they're actually terrible. And you could just see it in like Nick Bosa talking at the end of it about. You know, they're all just exhausted and they want this to be over. And that's the reality. And you watch like Dre Greenlaw starts out the game and then his calf like looks like it ripples a little bit and he comes out of the game. Not great. They pull him out because it tightens up.
Yeah.
And then
going to town.
My dog is going ham on this thing. I might have to stop this and just go remove it from him. But you saw Dre Greenlaw comes out of this game and they cannot defend the run. They lose all their physicality. Malik Mustafa comes back, but is missed like 3 tackles.
Yeah,
in this
he
game.
Did not have a good game, Mustafa.
It's just every part of them. There's nothing to feel great about. I mean, Renardo Green,
I guess.
I guess.
Listen,
man.
We didn't learn anything new in this game, like legitimately. Like, we knew Renardo Green was a good player. We knew Mustafa's like, I was actually, you know, take that back. I thought D. Winters had a pretty nice game. Was it perfect? Hell no. I thought D. Winters had a nice game. That's a positive. Yetur Gross-Matos was okay. That's a positive. George Kittle we knew he was good, Tony. He's awesome. He's the MVP of the team. I'm not even sure, Jam18, appreciate the conversation here. I'm not even sure Pat O'Donnell was good.
He had one good punt to start the game.
Yeah, first punt was good. Every other punt, not so sure. I'll have to check the tape. But as I was saying, the Chiefs are like the bizarro Niners, to where you watch them and you get the same sense of like dread. They're not good. They commit penalties all the time. They're brutal. And then they just win because they're great, great at situational football. And the Niners are butthole at situational football. Just couldn't be worse.
They just collapse against the slightest bit of pressure, even when there isn't pressure. It's just them not being able to execute. It's somebody just fundamentally failing to execute a block, a false start. And then it just, I almost said it's spring rolls on top of each other. So that's where I'm at mentally. That
would be incredible.
It's spring rolls on top of each other. That's where my brain is at. I could go for a spring roll.
We were having, God, that sounds delightful right now. We were having the conversation before the game. So you look at, Mike McDaniel's team, not very good. I'll say, I don't get to watch the Dolphins all that often. Certainly not in full splendor and full Technicolor.
Calais Campbell almost murdered Brock.
Awesome player.
At the age of, I think, 52.
Well, I'm going to say this is the last time I'm going to mention it. I wrote that I think that the 49ers offensive line would have been better off at the snap, just lying on the carpet and curling up in the fetal position. I feel like that would have been more effective than what they provided.
It's tough because Aaron Banks has not played well and now he's done for the year. So I'm not going to rag on him because he just probably suffered a major MCL injury.
It's definitely an MCL. I mean, it was like the most obvious MCL. Even I could diagnose that. I went full quack Chargers doctor.
That's right.
I'm like, yeah, that's an MCL. And Jalen Moore was terrible in this game. For all the nice things we've said about Jalen Moore, that ended quickly because within two series, I'm like, this ain't good. This is bad. I can't even fault Spencer Burford for being like comically inept.
He hasn't played left tackle since he was at UTSA.
I mean, it's just, we were trying to figure out who was going to play, and we're like, is it Gutierrez? Like, are they going to play?
I don't think he's active. I don't know. I kind of want to see that. I think they should throw out a bizarro offensive line next week, which is probably what's going to happen.
Sober.
And just all practice squad guys.
Nude.
And let Josh Dobbs run the offense.
Garendo was inactive, but I think Gutierrez was in fact called up. And
no, I'm pretty sure they just waived him.
Oh, that was what that email was about.
Yeah, they got rid of him.
I saw him on the sidelines.
They'll bring him back, but
I saw him on the sidelines during the game. They cut to the sidelines. I'm like, is that Gutierrez? Oh, no wonder he's not playing. He's just wearing a t-shirt. Let's just dive in on this. Okay. Does anyone really think that Brock Purdy was the problem today?
No, in the interception, he got murdered by Calais Campbell. He might have got picked anyway on that, to be quite frank.
But it was not a good throw. I'm not implying that Brock Purdy
I think there's like a major gap in like viewing Brock as being somebody who needs pieces around him. I mean, most quarterbacks need some pieces around them. Even Mahomes has Kelsey and Josh Allen kind of just has himself, but he's got Shakir and they've got, a decent offensive line.
He went out and traded for Amari Cooper, who did bust today.
But Brock is somebody that needs more pieces than those guys. And I don't think we've really ever tried to argue that otherwise.
I don't know if there's a quarterback in football who doesn't need good pieces around him.
Right. Like, right. But this offense from a strategic and a functional standpoint doesn't have the guys up front to buy him enough time to execute some of their staple concepts. And they've been using Juwan Jennings in place of Brandon Ayuk, who, even when he didn't get the ball, you're seeing how much of an impact he had in sort of one, like a gravity and creating space for other players and being able to attack defenses vertically, which Juwan just doesn't have the speed to do. That's been a fact of his career. Like, if you want to be basic about it, just look at his testing figures.
Yeah.
He's like a bottom 10 percentile athlete at the position. That's the reality of it. And you're playing him at X, and he's crafty, and he can make tough catches. but he doesn't. He shouldn't really be playing X, and that's why he played slot his whole career. Debo is a guy who's a zone receiver who, if he's got space in zone, he can run after it. Great. He can run two routes, and he can run screens. Like, that's it. And then you've got your rookie who's, like, lining up the wrong way. Kittle's great.
Doesn't he have Kittle, Debo, and Juice, all former All-Pros? First off, you're including a fullback as part of the conversation. If we're adding in the fullback as some sort of argument as to why Brock Purdy should still be putting up MVP caliber numbers, I don't really need to counter the argument.
Right. Like, and Garendo was good at receiving, but Patrick Taylor's a nothing.
That was brutal. That was brutal. And we had to watch the game to find out. Please, Juice is an offensive weapon. He's offensive. It's offensive to watch Juice sometimes. He had a good game today, by the way.
I love that.
It's an incredible jowl from Hugh Jassel.
That's unreal.
Which is a great name, too.
I think it's fair to look at that and say, all right, Purdy has not performed well under poor conditions. I know Tony's joking. I appreciate that. I think it's fair to question him over the season. And I'm not saying that he is an elite top 10 even quarterback.
No, I'll say he's a top 10 quarterback. I think he's a top 10 quarterback.
I think he's like right on that fringe. I'd have to do the rankings and it depends. But Brock has not been, I think, the main problem at all in this season. He's done a lot more than he's gotten credit for, and he's also made some really stupid mistakes because he is overcompensating and he's not trusted things like he has in years past. But he's also taking shots left and right because, you know, he feels like he has to do anything. But you're right, he's not seeing things like he did in the past, and that's reason for concern. But I think the reality is, I haven't seen enough to say it's not worth paying him. I think paying him, how you structure it, like we talked about in last week, is going
to
be important.
We don't need to rehash all that. I will say,
they're going to keep him.
I'll say this. The only question you need to ask yourself is, are you willing to let Brock Purdy walk out the door? If you are, good for you. Just good for you. I would be petrified of that concept. I can tell you full on that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are petrified of that concept because there's no alternative. Everyone wants to play this game, which is easy to do hypothetically, but never would manifest in the real world of, oh, well, you could get Sam Darnold for $40 million and then you don't have to pay Brock. Somehow Brock's number keeps going up, but Sam Darnold's doesn't in these conversations. Sam Darnold could never get more money, even though he'll be on the open market, in fact, whereas Brock Purdy's number keeps going up while he's negotiating against nobody. But that's fine. But beyond that, the idea that, oh, well, we could get Brock Purdy, and then we could get Darnold, we can get him for $15, $20 million less, we should do that. No, you shouldn't. We went over it last week, but like, y'all ain't watching Sam Darnold. What don't you like about Brock? Oh, well, he makes some boneheaded decisions. He's a bit too much of a swashbuckler. Y'all familiar with Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold.
But Darnold does have the elite arm talent to fit it in tighter windows and has, like, you know, the ability to throw it downfield with, I'd say, better accuracy. He's been great in, you know, testing the deep third of the field in a way Brock hasn't this year.
So let's go over these two. So why would Darnold leave? I mean, I don't think he wants to leave. It's obviously working pretty well for him. Yeah. But the Vikings did draft J.J. McCarthy, and I'm not sure how they want to structure their situation. And I think he stays around. I think they probably just franchise tag him, and they roll with that. But that's extrapolation. And certainly, we're all entitled to extrapolate here. Dank, get Rodgers for the vet minimum and bring him in. heard that one, LOL.
Oh, man, I mean, I really don't like that guy. I just want to just say that. I really am.
I'm willing to let the enigma that is. We can all learn something from Aaron because our minds are so closed and his is so open.
He's
divorced and yet he's never been married.
It's the male version of like the Etsy girl who's like, got, who has like some tapestries hanging on the wall, but is really just has like very basic things and tries to be like a little woo woo and like, you know, has some gems and stones, but doesn't really have like an understanding of philosophy, just like went out in the woods and did mushrooms once. And they're like, wow, the world is crazy.
Yeah. Listen, we can't all have the same mushroom experience you had out in the woods, Jake. But I will say,
moon, man,
I don't give a shit about being a douchebag or whatever. Right. Like, I don't care about that. That doesn't, it legitimately doesn't bother me. If you're a sick ass quarterback, Aaron Rodgers has been a douchebag probably his entire existence. He's also one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he's not anymore. And what would this team look like if they had a quarterback who couldn't move in the pocket? You know, like, what would this team look like if Brock didn't have the ability to escape the pocket and create yardage? It would be so, so, so much worse. A lot of people are going to suggest that Kyle goes and gets Kirk Cousins. At least there's a conversation to be had there, because it would be a massive reset. You would trade Purdy in this scenario. You'd have to go all in on trading Purdy, let someone else sign him, and now you get Cousins, who is even less mobile than Rodgers coming off the Achilles injury, and who's out there throwing Jamie Moyer fastballs. Wow. It's a brutal watch.
Oh, that's a good line.
Thank you.
Nice.
But at least you're getting him on the Russell Wilson free 99 contract, right? But again, I this is the other part of the Brock conversation that I don't understand, Jake. Who are you losing because you keep Brock?
Not really anyone. I think it's a question of people, I think, go, all right, well, you can't pay everybody, and that's true, but they're not planning to. And they think this thing out years in advance, and they know how this thing is probably going to be structured. You're already planning to probably lose Hargrave and maybe Debo and, you know, who knows, Juice or, you know, Charvarius Ward. There's plenty of guys, right? They've already thought that through.
Right. And, okay, but like this argument of you don't pay a quarterback $50 to $60 million to deal with a team with this many holes. You know what the biggest possible hole you could have is? Not having a quarterback. Then it doesn't matter who's on your team, right? Like, there are some teams in the NFL that are actually kind of sick. I think the Tennessee Titans are a super talented team. I don't think they have a very good head coach, first and foremost, but I know they have a shitty quarterback. Doesn't matter who's in there. They have a shitty quarterback. So, doesn't matter how good your team is. If you don't have the quarterback, you don't have anything. And the idea that, oh, well, you shouldn't pay him $50 to $60 million, you saw Tua tonight. Did Tua look like a markedly better quarterback than Brock Purdy? Not really. He's very dependent on a system that's been built entirely to fit what is a pretty impressive
sort of, yeah, you know, it is an impressive system.
But like, are you willing to let him walk out the door and live in the ambiguity of what happens next? Because it's a lot more ambiguous than any sort of scenario you can lay out in your mind. You know, I'm dealing with this with like the Missouri Tigers right now. They finally got a quarterback, right? They finally got a quarterback tonight. Not that anyone else gives a shit, but they were living in this ambiguity of, we need to get a quarterback in the transfer portal, but a bunch of guys signed at a different spot or whatever. So they were just like, is our season over before it starts next year? Because we have to figure out quarterback. It doesn't matter what other great players we might be bringing in. We don't have a quarterback. And so if the price is the price, the Niners are in a position to pay it. I don't see
right. You're either a football team or you're not, or you're a tanking project. Like, that's just the reality of it. Like, you can either be taken somewhat seriously, depends on a lot of other things, or you're just a total question mark. That's just a project. And the 49ers front office and Shanahan and Lynch aren't willing to go there. And I don't think they should. I get there is plenty to criticize about Brock. His decision making has been worse this year. He's been much more skittish.
Been worse this year.
I agree. I think it goes down to a core of issues. I think Shanahan has been poor to adapt and not evolve the scheme and been too reliant on McCaffrey to solve a lot of problems that weren't even solved when McCaffrey came back. There's a lot of other things that went wrong, but they have been poorly coached this year. I mean, the amount of mistakes that they've had have been damning. And that's just like, if you can't function, I mean, you can blame it on the players, but it feels like that goes to coaching, right? The just totally. General operation.
It has to fall on coaching.
It has to. The general operation of how you move the ball. Like, it feels like every drive, okay, if you get to the red zone without penalties and you overcome that, you're not executing the red zone, right? Right. And it takes a lot for you to get there. And you're not overcoming those key situations. I think I think it's fair to wonder what the 49ers could do if they don't pay Purdy and say, all right, we'll try this different stuff. And sure, you could add a backup defensive lineman or a starting defensive lineman, a starting offensive lineman. You could add many more pieces when you don't have the quarterback. That's how they benefited from Purdy. They came up short. They really needed to win that Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was the last clear year of it. And then they looked themselves, they were too afraid to make what they knew were the correct moves this offseason. And they're like, no, we were so close. We're just going to run it back. They couldn't break off the relationships when they knew that they had run their course, and they did it. So let's just run this thought exercise here. Let's play a game in which all these quarterbacks are healthy, and we're going to do some trades, okay?
Okay.
Would the San Francisco 49ers have a better or worse record if Dak Prescott was their quarterback this year?
Same.
Okay. Trevor Lawrence.
Worse.
Jordan Love.
Better.
Joe Burrow. Yeah, no, I'll get it's better, but not as good as everyone. It's not like Packers better.
It could, with Love, it could be better or it could be worse.
That's fair. Joe Burrow, better, right?
Of course. Better.
Tua.
Probably worse.
I agree. Jared Goff.
I would say worse.
It'd be worse. Jared Goff would be a worse quarterback for this team than Brock Purdy, unquestionably. We can both agree that having Justin Herbert or Lamar Jackson would be better, right?
Hot take there.
Right? Jalen Hurts.
The same?
I think they'd be better with Hurts, but marginally.
I don't know if they would, because they're so bad at running scramble drills, and that's all Hurts does.
Okay, I'll give you that. Those are all the quarterbacks who make $50 million. It seems pretty clear to me that Brock is of that category. Right? We just did it. There we go.
Yep.
Jam 18, Goff is good. Yeah, for the Lions.
And when he's not pressured, and then he gets pressured, and you watch in the playoffs, and he crumbles. There are moments he crumbles. Also, Iman report, exactly. Like if you don't pay Purdy.
Well, I think a lot of fans would like that.
Fair.
A lot of people, as we find out again, that would love to just burn this thing to the ground. Now, they have no solution as to how to build it back up, but they would like to burn it to the ground.
And the MO a lot in front offices and coaching is like self-preservation. I actually think Shanahan and Lynch are more motivated by like what is the right decision. I really do think they value like process and what makes sense for us.
Totally. Us meaning podcasters.
Yes. Yeah. For us specifically.
We appreciate that from them.
But at the end of the day, you are still, you know, preserving the operation. If you don't have the quarterback, you don't have anything.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. I mean, would you rather have Kyler Murray or Brock Purdy? Like, it goes without saying, you're taking Brock Purdy.
Some people would disagree with you.
Well, some people don't watch the second half of Arizona Cardinals seasons. I mean, it's just this.
Yeah.
You think about Jalen Hurts had a terrible year last year, right? And there were a lot of people. That was, I believe, the first year of his massive $255 million, 51 a year, 179 guaranteed deal. I have the numbers right in front of me. I didn't memorize them. So Hurts had a bad year last year. Two wide receivers that are paid top dollar. Right, your X and your Z are paid top dollar. You have a great tight end who's paid good money. You have I would actually say that the Eagles still have the best offensive line in football. I'm not a big Dan Skipper fan for the Lions, but that's 1 and 2 right there. Okay, still have that. Then you have a situation where they're like, well, we have this quarterback, didn't have a good year last year, defense fell apart. man, let's just go get Saquon Barkley. Didn't seem to be any sort of financial impediment at all to having a highly paid offensive line, having a highly paid wide receiver core, having a highly paid tight end. Like, let's just go get him.
They brought back CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, like, oh, we have to pay Darius Slay. Oh, no. You get young on defense. You pay your guys on offense. And you have no problem with your quarterback, right? Jared Goff's going to make $53 million on his new contract. That might be an issue for him as someone who can't make a play unless it's all laid out for him. It's an issue for Tua, who can't make plays unless it's all laid out for him. There are two kinds of quarterbacks in this league. There are the guys who can operate in the pocket solely on script. Everything has to go in perfect coordination. There's the other guys who play completely out of phase, out of script, ad-libbing, but they can't do the stuff in. So you have, you know, the Kyler Murray of it all, who can't do anything on time, in rhythm, on script. And then you have the Jared Goff of it all, who, when everything is perfect, or the two of it all, when everything is perfect, he's fucking awesome. Is Brock Purdy not both? Right?
Yeah, no, Brock plays off schedule in a way they've never had in a quarterback. And he does it too much. And he sometimes makes decisions where he, like, threw across his body to Debo to try and make a play. But this is also a game that's meaningless. So take those shots. Who cares? You know, like, yeah. But I know if you're evaluating him in an actual process and saying, okay, is that good quarterbacking? No, that's not a good decision. No question. But in these circumstances, that sort of playmaking and going for it, like, otherwise you're just, it's just over. I mean, the one play at the end where he takes the sack and takes forever, it doesn't really matter anyway. The game's over.
A couple good points here. Well, won't hurt as much as fair. That's fair. And we noted that in the moment. The Eagles also got a good DC. There's no salary cap on defensive coordinators and special teams coordinators. And if you needed any clearer examples as to why the Niners need two new ones, here it is. I don't give a damn. I've heard now, I don't even know what the number is, because I've heard so many people try to excuse this Niners defense. They're horrendous situationally, and they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. So it's bad coordination. They don't have the dudes, for sure. No argument there.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Somebody asked me
of what they have.
Somebody asked me about Sorensen today, and I said I was you know, hesitant to evaluate DCs in the system because they keep it limited. You know, Kyle tends to want it to be pretty simple.
Yeah.
But there haven't been things to write home about for Sorensen. He's had a couple, literally, blitzes that have gone well, that were well timed. But for the most part, if you're going to be a defensive coordinator in the system and you're going to keep it simple, everybody needs to be so sound, so in sync, so able to communicate seamlessly that everything is easy. That if you're going to be that simple, you're not like, oh, where do I go here? And obviously we're oversimplifying how simple it is, but they don't mix it up like a lot of defenses.
No.
They don't run a lot of creative stunts, a lot of creative blitzes. They run a couple stunts a game for the most part, but yeah, they're just not as creative as most defenses.
They don't disguise. They don't blitz. They don't try anything new. They're banking on a system where we have great players and we're going to have great players clean up because they can see the field, react, and attack. But when you don't have great players, that scheme doesn't do shit for you. And you saw today, Fred Warner was awful today. He was terrible.
He wasn't terrible.
I thought he was terrible.
I think he was
the third best linebacker on the field for the 49ers today.
Well, in the second half, he did not look good. I would say in the first half, I saw him make quite a few plays that were pretty impressive. Okay. And then I mentally tuned out. So it's, if you think he was terrible, probably in the second half.
Listen, that was nothing like an all-pro performance, to be sure. It's not to go in on Fred, right? I would appreciate
it. No, but he did have that, I think it was that one play where, was it Tyreek or, no, it was Jonnu Smith got behind him. Yeah. And
it's just like, it's right there, man. And like, there's a bunch of missed tackles. And it was simply, you know, you're running this basic cover three, sometimes cover four, everyone playing soft coverage, and they're playing soft. And part of my issue was, you know, why aren't you playing press man to man? Why aren't you pushing it? Why aren't you letting your good corners who can play that, do that. Well, they're afraid of Tyreek Hill over the top, right? So they're playing inherently conservative defense. We're going to, you know, keep everything in front of us. You're not going to burn us over the top. Okay. Fine. That is a justifiable argument. But when you see the system built for linebackers to clean up the defensive tackles' messes and the defensive tackles to never adjust their game as to help stop the run, and you're still not setting edges well. And, you know, I thought Leonard Floyd had a really good play when he held on to Jonnu Smith when he was going to do a screen pass there. I think it was the second quarter.
Yeah.
But then I also saw him get wiped out repeatedly when he was actually on the field to not set the edge, to the point where Achan just started running around him. It was easy. So when you have all of this going on, you do need to probably change up the system. What are you doing during the week? What is the point? Is it just spreading messages of affirmation and positivity? Like, what is it you do during the week? Because you run the same fucking game plan every week, regardless of who you're playing, as your roster gets more and more depleted from a roster that I question if it could have run it in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, we said from the start, and you look at it. I mean, this is a point we talked about. Without Greenlaw, they can't fill the run because the defensive tackles get wiped out. And you had that Jordan Elliott made one play, and then he's, you know, a no-show for the rest of the game. And
saloon door, and just open.
And also, like, the center gets tripped on that play anyway. There's just a lack of functionality on both sides. The offensive line is the major issue for the offense.
Both of the lines are brutal. They're brutal.
Jake. I mean, we talked about this, like, going into the season that we had major concerns. It's rough. Everything
that we thought would happen has come to pass, and yet it's somehow even worse than that.
You would just like to see them building to something for next year. Say, take these last three games and, all right, this is what we're going to try something. We're going to test some theories we've been working on. None of this matters. Let's get funky.
Jake, this is the Todd Downing school of coordination right now. Kyle, I thought, called a good offensive game plan. I really do. Now, Miami made it easy for him, but special teams, 4 penalties in the last 2 games, and not like errors of commission, just failure to line up or know the snap count. It's egregious. It's egregious what's happening. And then, defensively, There's nothing new. There's nothing interesting. They're not trying out theories. Again, the Todd Downing school of coordination. I was covering the Raiders. I asked somebody who I trusted who was in the building, hey, what's Todd Downing like? You know, what are they trying to do here? And I was told Todd doesn't really have ideas. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, some people don't have ideas. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Everyone has ideas. He goes, Todd doesn't have ideas. Doesn't have ideas. They're not things that come across his mind, ideas. He's just operating like an AI. I think AI might have more ideas than him at this juncture. So
Benali makes a good point. Like it feels so bleak that you'd want to build towards something, and it makes you question whether like this is, and we said weeks ago, like a couple weeks ago, I think we were saying they kind of have to nail it in the draft to really have a chance next year. And also, if you start off well and you're competitive and you're not shooting yourself in the foot, you can build towards something without every piece being perfect.
Totally.
I think where I come from is if you're Nick Sorensen, you say, I'm coaching for my job right now. I don't care what our identity is, whatever. I'm going to dial up. I'm going to go into my bag. I'm going to go deep into the film room. I'm going to go into a hole and I'm going to say, all right, we're going to mix it up against the Lions. We're going to get weird. We're going to be hyper aggressive. We're going to be antithetical to what we do and be unpredictable. Mm-hmm. Because if you go against the Lions with this defense and you're able to confound them in some way, which you won't be able to, they're going to throttle you. But I'm just saying,
my God,
it would be better to try something than to just keep doing the same thing and say, all right, well, this is the reality.
There's a suggestion of bringing in a 3-4 coordinator. I don't know where that came from. I guess anybody's available now. They don't have the personnel at all to run a 3-4. They barely have the personnel to run a 4-3. they don't have enough heft to run a 4-3. What are they going to do in a 3-4? There's no double. Everybody on this team is single gap and go. And that's great when you have great players behind to clean shit up and sound safeties and great linebackers. But man, like, there's, I have no problem. I prefer a 4-3 defense. I think that's the way you should go about your business. And I don't actually have a problem if you have the dudes running a zone where everybody keeps their eyes in the backfield. That's cool. But this is non-tenable, and I'm with you. I'm with you, Hutch. Like,
yeah,
Nick Sorensen won't do this. This is the reason that he was hired. The reason that he was hired is because he doesn't have thoughts like this of, oh, I'm about to lose my job and I'm never going to get hired for a role like this again. So I need to do something big and bold and brash to save myself.
Also, or
just live my life. Also,
everyone knows how over this is. It's going to be hard to motivate people in the last 2 weeks of the season.
Let's have some fun. Let's get weird.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Your school's been out for the summer. You say, guys, all right, open forum. What is not working for us? Let's go in. Let's have an honest discussion. What is not working for us? What have you been wanting to try all year that you have been afraid to tell me to my face? We got 2 weeks left to go.
Yeah.
What should we try? What is not working? And have that sort of discussion, because you're losing steam and you are losing morale with these types of losses, where it's a lack of function. You've got guys getting injured. You're just showing nothing that you're progressing towards for next year. And that's what you're supposed to be doing in these last three games, is saying, all right, we're going to lose, but we're going to do it in an interesting way and say, all right, we're trying some things. We're using guys' skill set and building towards something, yeah, anything, try something. Yeah. I don't know.
I just don't think that he has it in him. I mean, they can't even run a blitz in the A gap. That's 10 years old.
Also, the amount of times Fred Warner like flashes an A gap, you're like, obviously you're not coming.
Yeah, Fred, we know you're not going, Fred. Mike Zimmer did that shit 10 years ago. Mike Zimmer wasn't even a head coach when he was doing that shit.
It feels like they're 2 years behind.
Two? Like,
with their defense.
They're way further than 2 years behind. Watch the Rams.
And some of their offense is outdated.
Did you see the Chiefs on Saturday rotating safeties into a double team? Like, I get that it is hard to coordinate that.
Also, the Chiefs using the same blitz against the Houston Texans that they use against the Niners. Oh, and Tom Brady being like, it wasn't picked up right. That can't happen. Well, that's how it happens. It always happens. It's not a good look for the Shanahan system in that tree.
The Shanahan tree is looking real musty right now. Real musty.
They need to have a retreat this offseason. Go down to Cabo. Go down. Yeah. Who knows?
Drink all the tap water. Everyone get in a communal bathroom. Purge the year. And then when you're empty and open to new ideas, discuss what you can do. Because the 11 personnel tree and the pragmatist tree of the quote-unquote Kubiak tree or the Shanahan tree or whatever you want to call it, but the McVay branches, the McVay branches with LaFleur, the McVay branch with KOC, that 11 personnel looking a whole lot better these days. Meanwhile, the fullback crew with McDaniel and Slowick runs a lot of 11, but they still have all these like basic principles. The Shanahan operation, the guys who are coming directly from the Shanahan tree, not looking so hot.
And I don't think it's so much that like 21 can't work. It's that there's a rigidity to it, that there's like a commitment to this identity. And when you're not able to run the ball effectively and set other things up and get the right coverage, like you can't win.
I don't think 21 can work anymore.
I think it's a fair discussion to have.
I think 2 years ago, I told you that the cover three was dead. And I have been proven wildly correct. 21 works because it beats cover three. That's why Kyle runs it. That's why he runs cover three. It doesn't work because no one runs cover three anymore.
Also, by the way, with LaFleur, every goddamn team in the country from NFL to college is running spinner. I watched Ohio State do it. And I'm like, everyone's running it. And the fact that you sent it to me, that it was from like what, the 60s?
Yeah, I think it was 70s Florida A&M.
Everyone's doing it. And the 49ers tried it for one game and they haven't gone back to it. it's that sort of stuff that is like creative and a direct attack on personnel and scheme the Packers employed against the 49ers, that it hasn't felt like the 49ers have had a game plan where it's like, we're going to get him. It's like they're doing what they do, and what they do has been outmoted.
It's NBA basketball. It's
a great question, Tony. I don't know.
So, Tony, honestly, I think that he currently holds a fellowship. It's called the Anthony Lynn Fellowship for What Is It You Do Here for former Chargers head coaches. Sadly, I don't think there are any more Chargers head coaches that they can get to fill the role when Brandon Staley no longer has a job next year. We're going to have to eat it a little bit on Brandon Staley. I thought that was a good hire. I thought it could have been interesting. I don't know what the fuck he does, and it's certainly whatever he does ain't helping.
I don't know. I mean, listen, it's not clearly made a great difference.
Maybe it's the only thing holding it up. I don't know.
It's something where it was like, all right, so you have one shadow defensive coordinator and then one guy who's the actual defensive coordinator. It feels like it's been awkward. I don't know.
He just works on quote-unquote projects. That's all I know.
He works. What projects are you working on? Show me.
It's like a grad
I'd love
student.
To know.
Yeah, I would love to have these conversations. It'd be super.
Are you watching 1960s films? Send me something.
Yeah, it's just grad
stuff. Can we get a 7-man front? Let's try anything
on the planet.
Let's try something. I don't know.
I don't know. I will say, I don't know. I can't tell you if it's good or bad, but this defense isn't good. So what argument can you make that he's helping? But Gravy, he does the ball meetings. At least this defense has gotten lots of turnovers. He's nailing it, you guys. Just doing great stuff. I want to say one more thing here, and then we got to run. It has been suggested. There's a couple names that I want everyone to keep in mind for defensive coordinator, because I know that there is a suggestion that they're going to keep Sorensen around. I'm not going to let that happen. I can't do this anymore.
Really?
I appreciated that today CBS did a lot of cuts to him on the sideline, and every time he's just lost. You just see it. I mean, it's
yeah. I noticed that was the first time they've really cut to him on the sideline, and it was.
And you look in the eyes, and it's like me looking at my golden retriever. There's just nothing back there. There's nothing happening.
He's just
floating on the water, living his life. He's kind of got a golden retriever energy to him. Which, hey, go to town. Probably a better way to live through life. Olbrich is going to be a top name. I'm sure he will be very widely sought after.
They'll obviously look at Salah and see if
Salah's not coming back. I can tell you, I can tell you full stop, he's not coming back. It makes no sense for him to come back. He's trying to get another head coaching job in this league. He's not going to get one. But the last thing that he can do if he wants another head coaching job is to go back to San Francisco, because if he's successful again here, then they'll just think it's San Francisco. Right? He has to prove that it's him. So he has to go somewhere else.
I kind of disagree with that. I get it. It's like you're going home, and it's, but at the same time, like they've had they'd be firing two defensive coordinators in 2 years. You go back and like sort of reprove yourself. I get it. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying
that's galaxy.
He could prove something coming back.
Right. I don't think he stays in Green Bay. I do think that he gets a defensive coordinator gig somewhere, and that. I think he'll be successful there.
Do you think he would be a good college head coach?
Salah? Absolutely.
I was just, he would be a really fun college head coach.
Yeah, he would. He would be great. Now, I don't think he wants that gig because it's a lot. Eberflus, absolutely a name to keep in mind. That is 100% what is the goddamn name of the defensive coordinator for the Chiefs. Jesus Christ.
I'm not even going to help you.
No, I'm dying. I'm dying. Please help me.
Spags. Steve Spagnuolo.
That is peak Spagnuolo. That's exactly what Kyle wants. So I don't know if Olbrich's going to do it. I want to throw one other name into the mix. Notre Dame defensive coordinator Al Golden.
I almost thought you were going to say Al Gore, and you really had my attention.
Former Vice President of the United States, Al Gore. No.
He's like, the inconvenient truth is this defense is terrible.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry. Go on.
So.
Oh, man.
I don't know if anyone had the displeasure of watching Friday night's playoff game between Notre Dame and Indiana. But what Notre Dame's defense is doing this year is multiple, fascinating. They're talented, don't get me wrong. But that looks pro to me. It looks like a pro defense. They're running a lot of professional stuff as opposed to, yeah, the Al Gore thing was going to get the chat going, no question about it. but...
God, I love
their running translates, right? And it's a lot of like what Jeff Hafley was doing at Boston College, and he was just like, I can't do this anymore. Al Golden, former University of Miami head coach, he's never going to get another head coaching job at the college level again, but he was with the Lions the last couple of years before he went to Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman, took on the DC role, and that defense is humming. You could do a whole lot worse than going and getting Al Golden, at least in my opinion.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I sidetracked your very eloquently stated interesting point with an Al Gore bit that everybody has just latched onto.
It was a lot funnier than anything I was going to say. Okay,
it's a good point. Go. I like that name.
Al Gore. Go get him. I'm super serial, you guys. As somebody who has made my fantasy baseball team Man Bear Puig every year for the last 14 years. I do love a good Al Gore.
By the way, we're heading to the finals in both of our leagues.
Thank you, Jake.
Domineering performances.
Jim Schwartz is the defensive coordinator of the Browns. To answer the question.
Maybe they blow it all up there.
Anthony Lynn's son is the defensive coordinator at USC, which if you've watched USC football, not a compliment. So
USC should be burned to the ground.
Should give them the death penalty, not because they've broken any rules, but because they're impossible to watch.
Just go back and watch when we were talking about Jarrett Kingston, the splits that USC's offensive line was running where they're all 3 yards apart. Get serious.
It's so hard to believe that program is just in absolute shambles these days. It's so hard to believe that a coach in Lincoln Riley, who is running the most ridiculous, it's not even inventive. It's just dumb football stuff. I hate that guy. I can't stand him. I don't know how this guy got labeled a genius. I don't get it.
Folks,
this guy wouldn't cut it for a second in the NFL.
He's in the lie. Brutal. USC's a joke. Before we get out of here, we're gonna start getting into some draft. We gotta come up with an exact plan here. Holidays are gonna be chaotic, but after that, got the Lions game. We're gonna start getting into some draft. Yeah. We might talk. I know this might not excite some folks. We'll probably talk a little bit of Warriors.
Yes, that is the other goes. Things. Yeah,
that's part of the other things. But if you've got weird questions. Yeah. Leave them in the comments. After the stream's over, leave your other... If you had a comment that you got in here that we didn't get to, leave it in the comments once we end this stream.
That's right.
In the comments. We will get to it.
Jake, do you have access to our email address?
I do have access to our email address. No one's using it. DieterandJake@gmail.com.
Okay.
Hit us up.
You can send that there, too.
Send us whatever. We appreciate all of you. You guys are hilarious.
You're way funnier than us.
Also smart, and I appreciate that. Some of you are smarter than others, but that's okay. You know?
We got the same dynamic
going. Egalitarian society, folks. I think that sums it up.
We all have wonderful qualities. And then there's the 49ers.
We will get into the draft. We will get weird with it. That's our MO. Might have a project we're working on. Depends on Dieter.
Fuck you. You're right, but fuck you. We can also get into the San Francisco Giants YouTube game conversation.
God. Oh, we're just reviewing the San Francisco. We're actually not talking about baseball. We're talking about the San Francisco Giants media.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the San Francisco Giants baseball team's YouTube page.
Just their YouTube channel.
Where they're like, San Francisco's next superstar with a picture of Willy Adames, and they're just like clickbaiting it, and it's not working. If you haven't seen it yet, actually, I'll just show everybody. Hold on. Let's do this and we'll leave. You want to fill the air? Or are we going to?
No, I didn't want to fill the air. I just wanted to let the audience sort of zoom in on your face as you sort of examine the reality of the San Francisco Giants. Well, as far as dropped 100 viewers just for bringing this up. Yeah, that's about right. That I think once you, I genuinely have a reaction when you hear the Giants, you just go, oh God, no, I don't want to hear about that. And that's their fault. That's their fault for continuing to play baseball.
So
and not making it interesting. Here we go.
New San Francisco Giants shortstop who became an instant, what did they say in here?
Well, let's not
instant
play
fan favorite. That's
Let's
their
not play this.
That's the title. We're not playing it. The new San Francisco Giants shortstop who became an instant fan favorite. Just the most clickbaity title of all time. Totally untrue. And just killing it with 11,000 views on 129,000 subscribers. They're doing great, Jake. It's going so well.
It makes me sad. It makes me sad. Watching. Not as sad. Actually, more sad than the Niners, which is maybe something to be said for the Niners. It's not as sad as the San Francisco Giants, folks. Remember that. When you're feeling bleak, you're feeling like this is all going down. At least it's not the Giants.
They can
right?
turn this thing around.
You still feel something, and that's important.
Do we though? But do we? All right, we gotta go. I gotta put my kid to sleep.
We gotta go, folks.
I'll talk to y'all later. We'll probably not get a stream until Friday. Just as a heads up, and then we'll do that.
We'll see.
I got family in town. I don't know about you. You're probably living life the right way.
I'm alone.
Good for you.
All right. Bye, folks.
Bye.